Joshua chapter 2, let's attend once again to the word of the Lord together. And Joshua, the son of Nun, sent two men secretly from Shittim as spies, saying, "Go, view the land, especially Jericho." And they went and came into the house of a prostitute whose name was Rahab, and lodged there. And it was told to the king of Jericho, "Behold, men of Israel have come here tonight to search out the land." Then the king of Jericho sent to Rahab, saying, "Bring out the men who have come to you, who entered your house, for they have come to search out all the land." But the woman had taken the two men and hidden them, and she said, "True, the men came to me, but I did not know where they were from. And when the gate was about to be closed at dark, the men went out. I do not know where the men went. Pursue them quickly, for you will overtake them." But she had brought them up to the roof and hid them with the stalks of flax that she had laid out in order on the roof. So the men pursued after them on the way to the Jordan as far as the fords, and the gate was shut as soon as the pursuers had got out. Before the men lay down, she came up to them on the roof and said to the men, "I know that the Lord has given you the land, and that the fear of you has fallen upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land melt away before you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and Og, whom you devoted to destruction. And as soon as we heard it, our hearts melted, and there was no spirit left in any man because of you. For the Lord, your God, he is God in the heavens above and on the earth beneath. Now then, please swear to me by the Lord that as I have dealt kindly with you, you also will deal kindly with my father's house, and give me a sure sign that you will save alive my father and mother, my brothers and sisters, and all who belong to them, and deliver our lives from death." And the men said to her, "Our life for yours, even to death. If you do not tell this business of ours, then when the Lord gives us the land, we will deal kindly and faithfully with you." Then she let them down by a rope through the window, for her house was built into the city wall, so that she lived in the wall. And she said to them, "Go into the hills, or the pursuers will encounter you, and hide there 3 days until the pursuers have returned. Then afterwards you may go your way." The men said to her, "We will be guiltless with respect to this oath of yours that you have made us swear. Behold, when we come into the land, you shall tie this scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down. And you shall gather into your house your father and mother, your brothers, and all your father's household. Then if anyone goes out of the doors of your house into the street, his blood shall be on his own head, and we shall be guiltless. But if a hand is laid on anyone who is with you in the house, his blood shall be on our head. But if you tell this business of ours, then we shall be guiltless with respect to your oath that you have made us swear." And she said, "According to your words, so be it." Then she sent them away, and they departed. And she tied the scarlet cord in the window. They departed and went into the hills and remained there 3 days until the pursuers returned. And the pursuers searched all along the way and found nothing. Then the two men returned. They came down from the hills and passed over and came to Joshua, the son of Nun. And they told him all that had happened to them. And they said to Joshua, "Truly, the Lord has given all the land into our hands. And also, all the inhabitants of the land melt away because of us." This is the word of the Lord. And in the name of the Lord, let me ask you a question this morning. Do you have what it takes to be a Christian? Do you have the foundational prerequisite to become a Christian? Do you still have one thing that you still need to remain a Christian? Do you have sin? Sin is the thing you need to bring with you through that door every Sunday morning. If you do not bring it with you, we cannot help you. If you come here without sin, we have no product and no service for you. The Bible cannot avail you. The Bible says to you that if we say we have no sin, we deceive ourselves and the truth is not in us. If we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. If we say we have not sinned, we make him a liar, and his word is not in us. You see, in a moment, we're going to talk about Rahab, the prostitute from Canaan, and her sins. And so I need to ask you, do you think you have anything that she didn't have? Do you think that your sins or that my sins leave me in a better position to come before God than Rahab? Now, Rahab did sin. At the minimum, she committed fornication. Almost certainly, she was a guilty party in countless marital breakup. Beyond question, she will have procured abortions for herself and for others using potions and lotions of the ancient world. But what we really need to grasp this morning about Rahab's sin is that her sin drove her to Jesus. Children, here's what you need to know about this lady, Rahab. When Jesus came 2,000 years ago, there was a type of woman who ran to him. There was somebody, a kind of woman, who knew that they utterly needed Jesus. A kind of woman whom no one else would talk to, but whom Jesus had time for. A kind of woman who cried in the presence of Jesus because he forgave their sins. And they knew that they needed Jesus to forgive their sins. Now, respectable grown-ups didn't go around crying in front of Jesus. Bank managers and policemen and ministers of religion, they didn't cry for joy when Jesus forgave their sins. But prostitutes did. Women like Rahab did. That's what you need to know about Rahab. They loved Jesus. They knew that they needed forgiveness because they were sinners. Children, you should be able to answer question one on your sheets. Women like Rahab came to Jesus because they knew that they were sinners and they needed forgiveness. All of us, once again, sin is the thing that you need to qualify to be a Christian. So let's look more closely at Rahab, the Canaanite prostitute. She became a Christian because she knew that she was a sinner. Rahab is the prostitute turned Protestant turncoat. Rahab, you see, was saved by grace alone, through faith alone, in Jesus alone, because of her sin. Verse 1 tells us clearly that Rahab was a prostitute. Now, you might think that's all we need to be getting on with to condemn Rahab as a sinner, but there's more. We need to think for a moment where this story comes in our history, in the history of the world, in the history of God's people. God created a good world and put man in it to work it for his glory. Don't worry, I'm going to be speeding up. I'm not going at this rate through the Bible. And our first ancestor, Adam, sinned. And ever since then, the world has been full of violence, full of sin, and especially full of murder. Sometime later, God chose a man and his offspring, his descendants, Abraham, and promised him a land that went from the river Nile to the river Euphrates, and in particular, a place called Canaan in the middle of it, roughly where Israel and Palestine are today. And God said to Abraham, I'm not giving you the land yet. It will become your descendants' land after at least 400 years. Why the delay? God said, for the iniquity of the Amorites, the sin of the people living there, is not yet complete. God delayed giving Abraham's children the land of Canaan because he was waiting for the inhabitants to continue to sin and get to the point where they needed to be wiped out. They needed to be executed as murderers. They didn't just kill everybody. Yeah, they did do that. They also killed their own children. They burned them alive. That was their idea of going to church, burning their old children alive. Okay, so when God says to Israel, go in there and wipe them out, he's not commanding genocide. He's commanding a death sentence to a nation of murderers. And exactly as God promised, Abraham's children went down to a place called Egypt. God brought them out. He sent plagues during the Passover upon Egypt. Israel came out. God miraculously parted the Red Sea, brought them through. They wandered in the wilderness, They had various adventures. They cross over, and here they are at the beginning of our passage today, on the edge of the promised land of Canaan. Now, this woman, Rahab, even if she had not been a prostitute, she would still have been a Canaanite. She would still have been part of that society that was under a national sentence of death as murderers. And that whole society could have been saved. All they needed to do is what Rahab did. Surrender. But they didn't. They were irrational. They knew, Rahab tells us, all of them knew that the Lord had given them over to Israel to be destroyed. And instead of surrendering, they tried to put up a fight, knowing up front that they were going to lose. Now, we too have national sins. We don't see them. We're immune to them. We're blind to them. Sin blinds you. Even we Christians do not see a great deal of our national sins. But when people from other countries come here, they spot them because they're not familiar to them. Let me help you see that. Let me show you a national sin from another country. You'll see how quickly you see it, even though no one there does. A friend of mine has been for the last 2 years in Uganda. He sent me an email last week saying, a student, a Christian student training to be a minister, came to see me this week to ask for advice on what to say to some Christians in his placement parish who had caught a cattle thief. And they'd beaten him up. And they'd burned him to death. And the police quietly came and took away the body, no questions asked. And these murderers were there in church the next day. No problem. Now, this is Uganda, a nation packed full of Christians. This is not some heathen, unevangelized backwater like modern Scotland or Wales or Cambridge. This is a nation where the police were Christians, the murderers were Christians, and the cattle thief was probably a church-going Christian. And this happens on a daily basis there, and nobody notices that this is an egregious national sin. Now, I'm not going to give you the litany of national sins that I can see in England, because they're probably not as important as the ones that I can't see. Let me give you one that we as Christians commit, as evangelicals especially. We are desensitized to it. We are slanderers. The way that we talk about other Christians, the way that we write about them, the way that we think about them. We don't even notice it anymore. I have to kill, in my own life, slander against my brothers in Christ on a daily basis, every day. And let me tell you, slander is no less serious than murder. Prostitution is no more serious than slander. So let me say to all of us, please do not feel that you're the one person here with some horrendous sin hiding in your closet that would shock anybody if you told us. Okay, we're not a sinners anonymous meeting. We don't stand up and say, hi, my name's Stefan. I haven't committed slander for 3 minutes and 20 seconds. Okay, don't be fooled by our niceness. Any Christian who knows his or her own heart is immune from being shocked by whatever you have brought with you through the door this morning. There is nothing here which any of us can possibly have done which gives us any disadvantage over Rahab, or which gives us any advantage over Rahab. Rahab was saved by grace alone. She couldn't be saved any other way, and nor can I, and nor can you, whether you know it or not. And if that offends you, that's fantastic. You're just beginning to grasp what it would mean to be a Christian. Rahab was saved by grace alone. It couldn't be any other way. I couldn't be saved any other way, and nor can you. Children, you should be able to answer our second question this morning. Rahab was saved by grace alone. I, that's you, am only saved by grace. My daddy and my mummy are only saved by grace. So all of us, Rahab was saved by grace alone, through faith alone, in Jesus alone. Let's have a look at her conversion together in chapter 2. You see, Rahab did nothing to earn her conversion. There is nothing in this whole chapter which gives her any merit. What she did was very simple. She changed sides. That's what putting your faith in Jesus means. It means you turn your back on the side that you're on, the world, and you turn to a new side, the side that Jesus is on, the church. Rahab became a turncoat. Verse 1, and Joshua, the son of Nun, sent two men secretly from Shittim as spies, saying, go, view the land, especially Jericho. And they went and came into the house of a prostitute whose name was Rahab and lodged there. This isn't what it sounds like. In the ancient world, if you lived in a walled city, there were two ways in. You could go through the gate. You'd be watched. You might be interviewed by the elders. If you're a spy, that's not the way in. There was another way. Ancient walled cities, the walls weren't like this wall. They were more like the walls of Pembroke College, okay? A big, thick wall full of rooms, almost more like a row of terraced houses than a wall. And if you're a prostitute, you want to live in one of those houses because as well as the door facing the inside of the city, you've got a window facing the outside world. So if somebody wants to come to you, they can come in through your window without having to explain their business to the elders. And that's why Samson, when he wants to visit Gaza, he goes to see a prostitute because he doesn't want to be seen by the elders. He wants to go through the window. That's what these men are doing. Do you see it there in verse 15? Then she left them down by a rope through the window, for her house was built into the city wall, so that she lived in the wall. These men didn't transact any business with Rahab. They just wanted to go into the city unnoticed. But they are noticed. The king sends his men to inquire, and Rahab misdirects them, sends them off hunting somewhere else. She's planned this. She's got an excuse ready, and it's quite plausible. Do you see it in verse 4? True, the men came to me, but I did not know where they were from. I don't ask the gentlemen for their names and addresses. It's bad for business. So she sends them off. And then she turns to the spies. And look at what she says, verse 9. I know that the Lord has given you the land, and that the fear of you has fallen upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land melt away before you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and Og, whom you devoted to destruction. Now, this is Israel's creed at this point. This is what God had promised to Moses four times in Exodus and in Deuteronomy. It's Rahab's story, and it's Israel's story. And what Rahab does is to read herself into it. Do you see? Verse 11. And as soon as we heard it, our hearts melted, and there was no spirit left in any man because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in heavens above and on the earth beneath. Do you see, she confesses that the Lord is God over heaven and earth. Did you catch that in verse 11? For the Lord your God, he is God in the heavens above and on the earth beneath. Everything that's about to happen to her nation, she's attributing it to the Lord who is God. She has faith in Jesus alone. That's what she's doing in chapter 11 of Hebrews, which Peter read for us earlier this morning. You see, she's not describing, she's ascribing. She's telling you that she knows that the Lord has alone has done all this. For the Lord your God, he is God in the heavens above and on the earth beneath. Children, you should be able to answer question 3 with me this morning. Rahab knew that only the Lord is God over heaven and earth. Okay, she confessed the true faith. She knows that God has made a covenant with his people, and she wants to be included. Do you see it there in verse 12? Now then, please swear to me by the Lord that as I have dealt kindly with you, you also will deal kindly with my father's house and give me a sure sign. Now, we kind of need to lift up the bonnet on that translation, okay? We need to look under the hood, because that translation is misleading. It makes it sound like tit for tat. It sounds like Rahab is saying, one good turn deserves another. That's not what's going on. Rahab is pleading to be saved by grace alone, apart from works. What Rahab wants to do is to change sides. Let me show you. That word there appears twice, kindly. It's a word that Ian has been telling us about over and over. If you come on Thursday nights to hear his expositions on the Psalms, you may be familiar with it by now. It's that word, chesed, which Ian will tell you means covenant faithfulness. Okay, it means a love a kindness of a type that is steadfastly faithful within a covenant relationship. It means a commitment to your partner in a covenant. It doesn't mean commitment based on what they earn. It means commitment despite what the covenant means you should do. See, later on in Israel's history, when God punishes them and sends them into exile, before they even go, he sends them this promise in Isaiah 54. For a brief moment I deserted you, but with great compassion I will gather you. In overflowing anger, for a moment I hid my face from you. But with everlasting love, with chesed, I will have compassion on you, says the Lord your Redeemer. We cannot earn God's love. We cannot earn his covenant love. You cannot earn his covenant commitment. That's something that God gives because he is God, because he is merciful. God's mercy overrules the punishment that we deserve. That is why Jesus died on the cross, so that God would not pour out the punishment that we deserve on we, his people. God shows mercy, steadfast commitment, undeserved love, this chesed word. See, she just wants to join the side that God has chosen. She wants to join God's people on whom he has mercy. She wants to be in that number. If you're coming on Thursday nights, 2 weeks ago, Peter reminded us about Ruth from Moab, another person who shouldn't have been allowed into Israel. The Moabites weren't. How does she marry in when she's not even allowed to? Do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you, for where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Rahab is no more trusting in works than Ruth was. Rahab is entrusting herself on God's grace alone, through faith alone, in the covenant God alone. She is trusting in the one who shows steadfast love to his people. Children, you should be with me on question 4. Rahab is trusting only in God's grace. Now, this passage shows us really quite clearly that she's joining the covenant people, because the way that she's saved has all of the hallmarks of God's covenants that save people. Look with me at verse 13. She's asked for an oath. That you will save alive my father and mother, my brothers and sisters, and all who belong to them, and deliver our lives from death. Now, from the very beginning, God's covenant has been with whole families, not just with Abraham, but with his offspring. And from the very beginning, he's been pruning some people out and grafting other people in. Abraham had 2 sons. One faithfully in, one pruned out. That son had 2 grandchildren. Esau proved faithless and was pruned out. Jacob became faithful and was kept in. When Israel came out of Egypt, the Egyptians saw that God had defeated their gods, and vast numbers of them joined them. They were grafted in. And then no sooner had that happened than a whole load of Israelites proved faithless and started worshipping a golden calf. And they were pruned out. In a few chapters' time in Joshua, a man called Achan proved faithless. And he and his family, 4 generations that would have lived under his roof, were pruned out. And here is Rahab, grafted in for 1,000 generations. Rahab is in the genealogy of Jesus in Matthew chapter 1. Rahab is the great-great-grandmother of King David. Rahab is the mother of Boaz, who married who? Ruth, from Moab. Israel has never been racial, but Israel has always been about whole households coming in. And so the fact that Rahab is changing sides, not earning anything, the fact that she's bringing herself and her whole father's household into the covenant people, you can see that even more clearly by the way that she asks for a sign. And it's a sign that's eerily familiar if you've read about the Passover, which has just happened. Okay, the Passover is how Israel came out of Egypt. It's how God punished every household in Egypt by killing the firstborn, except houses in Israel, if they put a certain sign on their house. Okay, and you can see the similarity again because you get Passover, parting of the Red Sea, Israel comes through. In a few chapters, you're going to get the parting of the River Jordan, Israel comes through, and then they celebrate the Passover again. Now, before the Passover, 6 days of eating unleavened bread and getting ready. Before Jericho falls, 6 days of marching around the city. In the Passover, you assemble in your father's houses. Rahab is told to assemble in her father's house. In the Passover, you needed a sign over the house to save your firstborn. God said in Exodus, "The blood shall be a sign for you on the houses where you are. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you. And no plague will befall you to destroy you. When I strike the land of Egypt." Rahab asks for a sign, and she's told it works for everybody inside the house. The sign of the Passover is blood. Rahab's sign is a cord, the color of blood. Okay? The Passover is being extended to grab Rahab and her father's house in. Now, Jesus is our Passover lamb. Jesus is Rahab's red rope, in whom she was trusting. She asks for all of this by an oath, and then she asks for a sign. Do you see it there at the end of verse 12? Where our translation has a sure sign. It's not a sure sign. It's a sign of loyalty. That loyalty word goes with the chesed word when you're making covenants, okay? It's covenant mercy and then loyalty to that covenant. And when God makes a covenant, he always gives you a seal, which is a sign. He gives you a sign which works to seal the covenant to you. It protects you. It's a sign and a seal that God looks at to turn away his wrath. God promises to Noah, no more flood to wipe away the world. Here is my seal, the rainbow. When God looks at the rainbow, he remembers and he will not send a flood. The Passover, here's the blood on the door. And when God sees the blood on the door, he passes over the house. Rahab's red rope, when God sees it, he makes sure the Israelites do not go in and destroy. The seal marks you out as a member of God's covenant under his protection. So what do the men reply in verse 14? The men said to her, "Our life for yours, even to death. If you do not tell this business of ours, then when the Lord gives us this land, we will deal according to covenant faithfulness." It's that chesed word again. And loyalty. It's that loyalty word again. With you. If you stay on our side, they say, we will deal with you as a covenant member. Okay, this is not tit for tat. It's not because you save our life, we're going to save your life. You can see that. Look with me down at verse 18. "Behold, when we come into the land, you shall tie this scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down, and you shall gather into your house your father and mother, your brothers and all your father's household. Then if anyone goes out of the doors of your house into the street, his blood shall be on his own head, and we shall be guiltless. But if a hand is laid on anyone who is with you in the house, his blood shall be on our head." Do you see, in the land of Canaan, there are only two groups. One group is under the death sentence. The other group is Israel. And Rahab is being told that whoever hides under this covenant seal within the house is treated as though they're within Israel. So instead of deserving the death sentence, they get the protection of the law of Moses, which says that if you murder somebody, you will die. So when the spies say, if we fail to keep anybody alive in the house, our life is forfeit, they're not saying, we've done a deal with you saying, because you save our life, we'll save ours. No, they're saying, you are as of now to be treated as a member of Israel. Rahab's father's house is under the protection of the law of the covenant, and no longer under the condemnation of the death sentence that God had given the Canaanites. They have all been transferred from the kingdom of darkness to the kingdom of his beloved son. And she's being told, remain in that kingdom and you will be treated according to steadfast, covenant, merciful love. So is Rahab's red rope necessary? Seems to be. Does the rope have magical power? No. Does the rope have the ability by itself to overpower the Israelite armies? No. But with the rope, they live. Without it, they die. The sacraments that God gives us, the seals that sign his covenant, are never just signs. nor are they loving acts of obedience. They seal his covenant mercy to us. Did the Passover blood exert power over God in Egypt? Does the rainbow have the ability physically to restrain God? But were they optional? Then if anyone goes out of the doors of your house into the street, his blood shall be on his own head, and we shall be guiltless. But if a hand is laid on anyone who is with you in the house, his blood shall be on our head. Rahab joined the covenant people and brought the whole house of her father with her. She changed sides. She's a turncoat. She's fighting with the foreign army. You see, she does what they say, and she tied the scarlet cord in the window. But they also do what she says. They're on the same side. She tells them, go and hide in the hills for 3 days. They go and hide in the hills for 3 days. She promises they won't get caught if they hide there, and indeed they don't get caught. Now, do you want to see the crowning glory? That Rahab has not earned anything, that Rahab has changed sides, that Rahab is now a part of Israel. Generation before this, when Moses sent 12 spies into the land, 2 were faithful. What were their names? Somebody call out. Joshua and Caleb. Brilliant. What are the names of these 2 spies in Joshua chapter 2? Can anyone tell me? No, you can't. They have no names. What's Rahab's name? Does she have a name? Did the spies spy out the land? No, they hid in the hills. Did the spies spy out Jericho, which they've been told to do? No, they hid under the eaves in the attic. But they bring back a report, and they said to Joshua, do you see it there in verse 24? Truly the Lord has given all the land into our hands, and also all the inhabitants of the land melt away because of that. How do they know? Verse 9. I know that the Lord has given you the land, and that the fear of you has fallen upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land melt away before you. Their report are simply Rahab's words. Rahab has become the faithful Israelite spy in enemy territory. Rahab has been grafted in with her whole father's house into God's people. She's done it by grace alone, despite her sin. She's done it through faith alone, apart from any deed that could merit her anything. Faith in Jesus alone, with no confidence in anything other than God's steadfast covenant love sealed to her. Children, question 5. Rahab has become part of God's people. She has done it only through faith. And her faith is in Jesus. Rahab was saved by grace alone, through faith alone, in Jesus alone. Rahab was a turncoat who left everything. You see, even though she hasn't earned a single thing, this has cost her father's house everything. Everything that they owned has been left behind. Her entire culture, their entire culture has been destroyed. Their city is gone, torn down to the ground. They have risked, and she in particular, for the fortnight that it took the spies to arrange for the invasion, the king's wrath. The king could have said, let's interview Rahab again. If she'd been caught hiding the spies, she'd have been tortured and killed by a people who thought nothing to burn their own children. It was not a pleasant risk that she was taking. But no price was too high to join God's people. And that's why she's in Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews written to Christians facing the threat of persecution. Hebrews written to Christians who are beginning to see that it's hotting up. Hebrews written to Christians who are thinking about leaving Jesus, who are thinking of asking God for a divorce, and Rahab is held up as an example for them, as somebody who gave up her whole culture, her whole city, as somebody who said, no gain is greater than Jesus. No loss is worth, you know, hanging on to if I'm going to lose Jesus instead. And our culture is increasingly, as we heard last Thursday night, viewing us as nutters. Our culture is increasingly going to think of Christians as people, frankly, to be dealt with. Now, why would anybody hang on to Jesus? Well, you would if you calculate the way that Rahab saw things. One day, Jesus will sound a trumpet. He will raise us up from our graves. He will call all Christians up to him. We will come back down with him as an army to deal out judgment. We're just waiting for that. We need to see our culture the way that Rahab did. We need to see that on that day, I don't know what will remain of unbelieving culture in Cambridge, but it won't remain for long after we return with Jesus to deal with it. We just need to stick with him. And on that day, our culture will be as irrational as Jericho, who should have surrendered. Our culture on that day should have given in to Jesus. Now, this is how Jesus talks about that very thing in Luke 14. Or what king, going out to encounter another king in war, will not sit down first and deliberate whether he is able with 10,000 to meet him who comes against him with 2,000? And if not, while he is still a long way off, he sends a delegation and asks for terms of peace. And the very next thing that Jesus says, so therefore, if any one of you does not renounce all that he has, he cannot be my disciple. Let's stand and sing of that wonderfully enriching, of that joyful renouncing of all that we have for the sake of Jesus.